we get very attached to the label. We say, this is my territory. I'm going to defend it. Do not encroach on my space. And how I create, it's not just even like, what's my space? It's like how I created it is also a very important part of my identity that I'm attached to. Well, I only do my multiple exposures in camera, or I only, you know, use lens babies if I want to blur or a glow instead of adding it in post, you know. So we get very attached to these things.
Well, hey everyone. Welcome to episode 369 of F-Stop, Collaborate, and Listen with your host, Matt Payne. This week on the podcast, I am bringing you an insightful and thought-provoking conversation that I had with author, musician, photographer, and all-around awesome woman, Beth Bulow. We talk about the nuance that exists in labels and our creative journeys. If I'm being honest, I think this might be one of my favorite episodes of the podcast that we've ever recorded. I don't want to give too much away, but it really got my brain going, and I hope it does yours as well. Before we dive in, I want to tell you about a workshop that I have coming up that I'm really excited for. As an instructor for Munch Workshops, I'm incredibly lucky to be able to teach in some of the coolest places on planet Earth. My goal is to help people deepen their love for nature and photography and to have a tremendous experience on our trips. I'm especially excited for a new workshop that I'm doing with Taylor Stone, where we're sailing the Chilean fjords on a small sailboat. Not only will we be able to photograph some pretty epic mountains, I'm particularly excited to see what kind of abstract and small scene photography I can create while I'm there. This is just one of the amazing workshops on my schedule for 2025. If you're looking for an amazing experience, check out a link in today's show notes or feel free to reach out. Cheers. All right, let's get to this week's episode with Beth Bulow. All right, Beth Bulow, it is great to have you on the podcast.
Matt, I am so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, of course, of course. And shout out to TJ Thorne, who connected us virtually. So that was great of him to do that.
Yeah,
always appreciate that. Well, Beth, I had a fun time interacting with you recently at our Out of Chicago Live conference. And you did a great job with your presentation. And I know you did some hosting there. So we're finally have that behind us, which is feels good.
Yes, a lot of learning. My brain is tired, but happy.
Yeah, it's funny. I was I've been in a conversation on a Discord channel last night about the value of Out of Chicago Live, and some people are like, "Oh my gosh, these events are incredible," and then other people are like, "Oh, I can learn everything that they offer there by watching YouTube videos." And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't think that's true, but."
Yeah. Well, yeah, if I could say really quickly that one of the things that I really appreciate, well, there are multiple things I appreciate about Out of Chicago Live, as in the virtual conference. One is that it seems like each year I'm noticing more and more community. Like, it's so supportive. People are so encouraging of each other. You don't get that everywhere. You certainly don't get it on YouTube. And it seems like everybody is there genuinely wanting to improve and learn. And the other thing I love are the image reviews. Again, you don't, you can't get that from YouTube, you know. If you submit images, it's super helpful. And I find I learn a ton just by watching the instructors, you know, talk about other people's images, whether they're attendees or even, you know, their own images. I think it's a huge value and great experience.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, Beth, for people who aren't familiar with you, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are?
Oh, gosh. You're getting right. So this is the question that is always so hard. That actually gets right to what some of what I know we're going to be talking about with how do you identify yourself, right?
Good point.
I know, right? Like just jumping right in, right? And in my sort of alter ego identity for many years was the introvert entrepreneur. So I did a post that was, you know, how to answer the most difficult question for most introverts, which is tell me about yourself. So that's all me dragging it out, right? And procrastinating and telling you about myself. But I'm claiming and starting to say more. I'm a photographer and creative, and part of my work over the past 15 years has been as a coach. So I've done a lot of leadership and executive coaching, and now I've experienced enough that I've been doing a lot of mentor coaching. So that's coaching other coaches to be better coaches and doing some more training and things like that with the coaching. But really, in the past, I would say 2 years or so, stepping more fully into my identity as a photographer. And it kind of feels like it's a full circle moment, because my early years, my formal training is as a musician. So I have a bachelor's and a master's in music performance and clarinet that I haven't used concretely as a, you know, I've not put myself out there like I'm a clarinet player in the world as a professional, because I shifted gears and went into nonprofit administration and arts administration. But it's something that stays with me, and I think it created my creative identity. It forged my creative identity from an early age, like the arts and this kind of mindset. And so after having, you know, kind of drifted away a little bit during those nonprofit years and then in the coaching, I feel like I'm coming back, and fortunate to do that all in beautiful West Michigan, where my husband and I have lived for the past 6 years. Dog, cat, old house that always needs repairs. So that's kind of us right now.
Any non-fur babies, like actual human offspring?
No human babies. Just the fur babies.
Sometimes that makes it easier.
I did a lot of babysitting when I was a teenager, so I feel like
I'm good.
I did my thing, and now getting a puppy, though, that was, I think, as close. I know people don't like, you know, comparing animals to babies, but I do feel like that was as close to a toddler as we will ever get in terms of kind of out of control. So,
I've that's done as close both, as I'll get. You're not wrong.
Pretty close. Good. Phew. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So
well,
that's me.
That's a perfect lead-in for the conversation we're going to have today about all kinds of fun subjects. So without belaboring it any further, both work? Yeah, I don't know. I want to explore a mantra of yours that you had shared with me. Stop trying to name it, just be it. Oh, mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. It is a phrase that popped into my head. If any of your listeners, or maybe you're familiar with David White, the poet, White is W-H-Y-T-E. He does a series he calls Three Sundays in November, Three Sundays in December, something like that. And I was listening to one that was about your calling or your vocation. It led me to that sort of aha moment, like, stop trying to put a label on what it is you're doing. And just be what it is you want to do. Now, the reason that was such a, it almost sounds basic, but the reason it was such an aha for me is because, like, my entire life, I have, and for most of us, I've needed to know, like, what's my title? What's my role? What's my label? How do I describe myself? And at the point when I was listening to David White's webinar, I was really churning with, if somebody asks me, what do you do, or who are you, I don't know how to answer them, because I want to be doing all sorts of things, but I don't know how to name it. And it took me back to when I mentioned the introvert entrepreneur before. When I first founded that business, I'd known since I was like, I could write, that I would write a book. Like, it was just something I knew I was going to do. And when I found that, I was like, oh, that's my title. That's my book. And so it was super easy. I loved having that hook and that niche. And we can talk a little bit more about that later. But once I knew, okay, this is a book, I got really obsessed with how is it going to show up in the world? Am I going to self-publish it? Is it going to be traditionally published? Is it just going to be an ebook? All these different sort of things. And I was spinning and spinning and spinning. And then one day I had this epiphany. It doesn't matter how it shows up. What matters is that you have to write it. It's not going to show up anywhere in any way unless you actually do it. And so I hope maybe, you know, you can hear that parallel between like, I can get all caught up in how something is going to manifest and forget like, oh, it's actually the thing itself that needs to happen before you get to the how. And so thinking about that, like, just start being what you want to be. Don't worry about putting a title, a label on it. It's kind of a just do it sort of spin, if you will.
I needed to hear that because I've been probably for the last, gosh, I don't know, 6 months or something, I have this idea for a book and like the idea keeps growing. But I keep getting stuck on some of those questions like, oh, do I self-publish it? Do I reach out to a publisher? It's like, no, Matt, you just need to sit down and create the damn thing. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. And I think it fits with any creative endeavor for sure. We can think, am I going to put my art in galleries? Am I going to just have it online? Am I going to do print on demand? You know, we can get all caught up in those things. And it's like, stop trying to name it. Stop trying to figure out the how and just do the work and trust that the path will reveal itself. I mean, it sounds kind of, I'm going to sound woo-woo a number of times here, but you know, it's kind of true.
Well, and not only that, but I feel like we get so caught up in trying to make whatever we're creating perfect, whether it be a photograph,
yes,
or a YouTube video or a podcast episode, blah, 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 blah. The list goes on. Yeah. A book, an ebook, a gallery on your website, whatever, a website. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just go create it and put it out in the world. Maybe get some feedback from some trusted friends before you do that, but just get it done first and then grow and learn and expand your knowledge and your abilities beyond that after that. Because if you just obsess about the perfecting whatever it is you're creating, you're never going to actually get it done.
Exactly. One of the most liberating concepts that I picked up on when I was really building my business was an MVP, a minimum viable product. And so the idea being, and you know, it's basically like beta testing. And companies do it all the time, whether we know it or not, but we can do it for ourselves. And the smaller we are, like the more independent we are, the more nimble we can be with that kind of thing. And so we think, I remember hearing someone say way back when I was first starting my business, they said, it doesn't matter if you change your business name, if you change your website, if you have a new brochure, if you change your title. They said, literally nobody is going to remember, which is humbling, right? Because you think, oh, if I put it out there, they're all going to know and they're all going to remember and they're all going to hold me to. And they're like, nobody is thinking about this as much as you are. And you have a lot more grace and room to pivot and evolve and change as you need to than you think you do. And so it's a kind of get over yourself and you know, pay attention to what resonates with you, what feels like it's most true for you. And I changed my business name, I want to say twice, I think, before I landed on the Introvert Entrepreneur. Nobody cared. Nobody was like, oh my God, I'm so confused. What do you do? They probably didn't even notice. So there's a little bit of getting over ourselves.
Yeah, there's so many other variables wrapped up in that, like imposter syndrome or perfectionism, yes, or how you were raised as a child or what your experience has been with failure or your relationship with yourself or with the things you create. But at the end of the day, I think it just makes more sense to put all that aside as best you can and fail often and fail quickly and learn from those failures, because yes, failure has such a negative stigma, but I think it shouldn't. And then, you know, build upon it. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. You just build upon it. That's the beauty of that, you know, viable product is at least you start a feedback loop and you start getting information and you can figure out what works, what doesn't work, and you can just keep doing the next iterations until it gets to where it needs to be. And nobody else is paying as much attention as you are. Yeah, just do it.
Right. All right. Well, you just kind of let us in there with the discussion on labels. You talked about being an author, being an introvert, being a photographer, being a musician, and I think there's a lot of labels that get thrown around in the photography world. Some of them that come to mind for me are abstract photography, landscape photography, fine art photography, digital artist, documentary photography, artist, photographer, real, fake. What's your opinion on labels?
Yeah. Oh, I keep thinking of that. How much time do you have? Because, you know, like, I think we would all agree that labels serve a purpose. You know, they're a cognitive shortcut. They release some of the cognitive load when we're talking about ourselves and learning about others and navigating our everyday lives. And from a business perspective, they help you to know where to focus. What's the bucket that I occupy? What's the piece of the pie that I occupy? You know, whatever metaphor you want to have. And so they help us. And I was thinking about this in prep for our conversation and realizing, like, labels are part of how we keep ourselves safe. If I can label it, then I can discern if it's a threat or not. And I don't mean that to sound overly dramatic, but it's like every day we are scanning the environment constantly for threats, whether we know it or not, whether that's we walk into a restaurant we've never been in and it looks clean and we're like, okay, this looks good. Or it doesn't, it looks sort of dark and grimy and we're like, I don't think so. You know, we might not see that as a threat, but we're making all of these sort of decisions. Or even if somebody's doing a rolling stop at a four-way stop sign, you know, like, do they look safe? Do I trust this? Are they going to stop? You know, we're always looking for these threats, and labels help us to put things into categories so we can easily say threat, non-threat. And when you think about even those examples that I just gave, yeah, somebody could get food poisoning. Yes, someone can get hit at a four-way stop. But most of the time, the threats that we're scanning for, like, it's a very low-risk environment compared to the like, reptilian impulses that those right. come from, right? I mean, you're the psychology person. you could speak more to this, right? That we have these ingrained fight or flight kinds of impulses, and it comes up with public speaking, right? People, you know, Jerry Seinfeld did that joke, you know, when people are asked, which do you fear more, death or public speaking? It was public speaking, or, you know, something of that nature. So it's because it activates something in us that has that fight or flight. So all of that to say, labels serve a purpose to help keep us safe in some way. And they help us to reduce that cognitive load and help us make those mental shortcuts so that we can have brain space for things that are more complicated. And most of us are not living in a threat-based situation. Are, you know, there's not a group of apes that's going to come and steal our food, you know, or we're not going to get bombarded with people because we're standing up in front of the room. So do we need to be as attached to those labels as much as we are? You know, I might be oversimplifying it, but, you know, it's innate, but, do we overdo it? Do we overthink it sometimes, especially when it comes to our how we present ourselves and our personal identity? Do we put too much stock in saying, I am a photographer, I'm an abstract fine art photographer? Yeah, so you wanted to say something.
There's lots to say, but I mean, you see this playing out all the time on social media with photography, and I'm as guilty of it as the next person, and I try to check myself constantly because it's those heuristics, those mental shortcuts that can get us in trouble. But you see it all the time with like AI, like, oh, you're an AI photographer, you're not like me, so mm-hmm. like you need to differentiate yourself by saying you use AI. And I think there is value in some of that, but that's a whole nuanced conversation. You know, you see people saying, oh, that's digital art, right? Like, that's not landscape photography, that's digital art. It's like, that's not what I do. I'm in my lane and you're in your lane. And I think what you're talking about is that people feel threatened because they're occupying your space of what you're mm-hmm. traditionally occupying, and you've built these walls around what it is you do, right? And when someone who doesn't quite do it the way you do it tries to enter into that space, it feels threatening, like you described. And I think the conflict happens where people that are doing something differently, like if someone is like a digital artist, right, like they're out taking pictures of Milky Ways and interesting foregrounds, and then they're blending it all into this single image, and then they're saying, look at my landscape photograph, right? Well, the traditional landscape photographer is going to feel threatened. They're like, well, that's not what you're doing. You're creating digital art. And I think the problem that I see happening over and over again, especially relating to labels, is that those people that are creating digital art, because that's what we're labeling it, right? They mm-hmm. want to be seen as landscape photographers, and that's where the tension and the conflict happens is the labels that people attach to what those things actually mean. And when someone does something that's maybe counter to what that label traditionally has meant, that's when the arguments happen, and that's when the emotions collide and all of that fun stuff. So you're absolutely right in your assessment, I think.
Well, you're reminding me of an out of Chicago moment from the weekend. John Cosmopolis he's an architecture, and I think he does nature as well, but I mostly think of him as doing architecture abstracts to be labeling. But that's, you know, let's say that's what he represents on his socials and in his teaching. And he has this whole series he calls Inceptions that is, it's kind of like is it Christopher Nolan that does the, you know, sort of whacked out kind of visual worlds. And so you are taking a normal static image, and you're using Photoshop and whatnot and other manipulations to make something kind of fantastical. And one of the questions I was curious about was, at what point does it cross a line and you can't really call it a photograph anymore? So I was wanting to label it, like, at what point does it become AI? And I think I can't remember exactly what he said. I have to go back to the recording because my brain was so full. But I do remember feeling a little bit of comfort in this idea that he did say, well, it's different because from AI, firstly, because you didn't just put in some word prompts and have it generate an image. You know, night sky, full moon, blue bridge, mermaids, and have it do something. Your source image, your source for that image was a real photograph. And then you manipulated it. And something about that gave me some comfort, because I find myself feeling some tension around AI. And like, if I see an image on Instagram and somebody doesn't name it, but I'm like, that is so clearly AI, I get kind of annoyed. Or I get annoyed if I see an architecture image, I'm like, that's really cool. And then I look at the caption, it says it's AI, and I'm like, ugh, because I want it to be real. You know, but that's, like you said, that's another conversation. But I think that AI is forcing this labels conversation. And part of the reason I was asking the question, I think now that you've said that, yeah, maybe there's a little bit of feeling threatened. And there's also, I like to think my best intention was to be honest. Like, I don't want to present something that, yes, a lot of those images are obviously manipulated, but sometimes you can't tell, you know, or somebody who doesn't know wouldn't know that you did a lot of fancy things with it.
And some people don't care. Like, as long as the end result is, you know, pleasing and it asks a question or answers a question or represents a metaphor or sparks imagination, like, that's the purpose of art, right? And so, like, it's tough because if whatever, like, the means through which that thing is being created shouldn't necessarily matter to people who appreciate art. And I think listeners are gonna be like, did Matt Payne just say that? Because I'm such a advocate for realistic representation of landscapes in our photography. I think it's a slippery slope no matter how you look at it in terms of compositing or AI. I mean, we did an AI panel on out of Chicago, and there were two people on that panel who were composite landscape photographers, and they were feeling threatened by AI. Like, well, that's not what I do. Like, that's different than what I create. I'm creating it by hand on the computer, and I'm using Photoshop to create it, and all they're doing is typing in words. And I'm like, the end result's very similar. So, I mean, I'm not totally sure it matters. So it is interesting to think about that. And maybe that's a good segue for my follow-up question that kind of might steer us in a different direction with this, because kind of where I was going with this around labels, and I think where you wanted to go with this on labels, is that there's a lot of tension that gets created through the use of labels and how we like, how we're psychologically, we like to defend those labels, right? Like, this is my ground that I'm standing on, and you're not what I am, right? How does the tension that is created by the use of labels and our desire to be creative people play out in terms of limiting us as photographers or as creative people?
Yeah. Gosh. I think you said it. We get very attached to the label. We say, this is my territory. I'm going to defend it. Do not encroach on my space. And how I create, it's not just even like what's my space, it's like how I created it is also a very important part of my identity that I'm attached to. Well, I only do my multiple exposures in camera, or I only, you know, use lens babies if I want to blur or a glow instead of adding it in post, you know. So we get very attached to these things. And to me, that makes our world, our creative world, smaller. Like, it just, it kind of, we put ourselves in a box that way. And it's like actors who are typecast or they're known for having played a particular role, and people have trouble seeing them in any other way. And so if I'm putting myself in that box, there's an expression, you teach other people how to treat you. I would say that that's a fair and accurate statement most of the time. You know, there's certainly exceptions to anything, but
it's better than the golden rule, by the way, because I find myself failing quite often with the golden rule, because there's a lot of stuff that doesn't bother me. And so if I do it to someone else, it might bother them. And so the golden rule fails me all the time.
Yeah. And it seems like that because of that, it's like become, I think there's a platinum rule or something, like treat others as how they want to be treated.
Right. And it's like, well, something like how do that. I know what that is?
How do I know what that is? And what if what they're telling me is not necessarily healthy? I mean, like a very simple example is somebody who answers their emails around the clock. What are you teaching people about that? You're teaching them that they should expect a response right away, that you're going to be available at all hours, you'll drop everything and all this kind of stuff. And then if you start imposing boundaries and saying, I'm only going to answer emails between 10 and 3, they're going to get mad. You know, it's going to cause a lot of confusion. So now I'm wondering where I was going with that, except that we teach others how to treat us. And so if we are treating ourselves as being in this box, then other people are going to put us in that box. Like we're telling them, hey, put me in a box. Put this label on me. This is how I want you to see me exclusively, you know, even to go to an extreme. And that really limits us. And we find ourselves like really wanting over time. At first, it feels good. And I can say this, like speaking directly from my introvert entrepreneur experience, I was incredibly relieved when I landed on that niche, because I had spent a year and a half at the beginning of my coach career trying to figure out, like I called it my niche du jour period, because I was like, I'm going to try this and I'm going to be a coach for nonprofit leaders, or I'm going to coach women, or I'm going to coach this. And it was exhausting. It was ineffective. I was all over the place. I was frustrated. And then when I realized this, it was like, boom, everything fell into place. I knew what I was going to talk about. I knew what I was going to write about. I knew what I would podcast about. I knew what to put on my website. You know, so I was, and I still am, oddly enough, despite what I'm saying, a fan of niching, you know, like having maybe this groove that you travel in. And after doing that for 8 years or so, I got really restless. And I started even myself like pushing back against the label, because I felt like it was too confining. And I felt like I've said what I want to say, you know, and other people are starting to say, you know, it's like, I don't need to be in this space anymore. And so I decided like, okay, I'm going to sunset that. I'm going to let that just kind of fade out, you know, fade to black. And so that's why there's a lot of tension here, because it's like, on the one hand, that label and me right now saying I'm an abstract photographer, super helpful to me. And it's a yes and. Yes, I'm that, and I'm more than that. And I want to, and.
I like that.
I don't want to be, you know.
No, I like the and, because it helps, you know, it helps you, like, alleviate some of the tension without limiting what you are giving yourself permission to pursue, in a way. Because it's interesting, you're talking about introvert entrepreneur. And it's like all the extroverts are like, well, that's not for me, even though the information you were sharing was probably super valuable for people who are also extroverted, right? And the same thing goes for, you know, landscape, nature photography, podcasts, mine, right? Like,
right.
Because of my strong views on what that looks like, I'm just guessing that there's a lot of people who like to do compositing and that type of landscape photography, or whatever you want to call it, digital art, whatever, they probably tuned out of this podcast a long time ago, which is too bad, because we've had some amazing guests, amazing conversations, and yeah, it's a topic that comes up a lot. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation, because I think there's multiple angles to this particular dilemma that we face. I'm curious, can you think of any benefits to embracing labels in our creative pursuits?
Yeah. Being able to claim some sort of label for myself gives me some courage. It gives me a little bit of confidence. It gives me a lane. Instead of feeling like I've got this entire map and I've got, you know, highway after highway and lane after and roads and all this kind of stuff, I like pick a lane. And it helps me to focus and not get overwhelmed. And I can just kind of say, okay, I'm going to try this creative lane and see what happens. And I think that's the key. It's just like we were talking before, that, you know, you can change your mind multiple times and nobody else is going to notice. It's the same for the photography too, probably. You know, we think that everybody all of a sudden is going to be like, what are you doing? And they might. But what's more important is, do you feel, you know, choosing some sort of lane, embracing that identity, embracing, not attaching yourself to it, but just embracing it, trying it on like a coat and saying, does this fit? And testing it out, getting feedback, paying attention to how it feels, paying attention to how much ease or resistance you're experiencing with whatever it is you're choosing to photograph or the places you're choosing to go or the subjects. That's the key to me. It's that makes it a healthy label, is that you are informed by it, but you're not attached to it. Mm. And that as you're informed by it, you're open to that feedback loop. You're open to reflecting and noticing what's working, what's not, and you're not judging yourself for, you know, how it's going. You're just like, huh, that's interesting. What can I learn from that? Instead of like, oh, I failed miserably. Okay, that wasn't what I expected. Now what? So it can help to ground you, especially in the beginning. That's mm-hmm. what the introvert entrepreneur did for me. It grounded me. It gave me some sort of route so that I could then explore and try, you know, different things. And I see the creative journey in very much the same way.
Yeah, it's interesting if you think about those labels and the positive aspects of what labels might help with. You know, for starters, it helps you become like a subject matter expert in that particular mm-hmm. thing, and you become more and more nuanced and skilled at whatever that lane is, right? And then you can also become kind of known for it in the community or whatever. And so I think there's benefits to having labels and like strongly defending those labels. However, I think to our earlier points, if you grow too attached to those labels, then you're going to limit your creative potential and potentially lose out on other ways of creative expression and things of that nature. So I think it's good to like constantly remind yourself that labels have a purpose, but don't get too attached to the label.
Yeah. Attachment is the source of suffering. I think that's a Buddhist thing, and it applies here. And, you know, I'll just add really quickly the other benefit of labels, especially in the beginning, because what we're talking about is, I think that labels serve a different purpose depending on where you are in your journey. And so for somebody at the very beginning of their journey, I would hesitate to say, like, you know, slap yourself with a label as quickly as you can, because you might still be exploring. But then once you start exploring, and I mean, that's what I did, you know, I dabbled, you know, and then I found, oh, this is a happy place. Okay, I'm going to really dig in here a little bit and claim this a little bit more. So that's appropriate at that point. And if I really dig into it and people start saying, oh, Beth is an abstract fine art photographer, great. And they see me as a subject matter expert and I have some credibility and trustworthiness, then I have some collateral or leverage to start stretch, you know, not to break people's trust, but to stretch it. You know, I've earned a little bit so I can be like, oh, you know, I know you're used to abstracts, but what about this? Or what about this? And so it can be a gateway, actually, to being more expansive, because you've built some sort of foundation that people can provides some level of comfort for them. And one more thought really quickly. One of my favorite sayings, especially when it comes to like marketing and putting yourself out there, is a confused mind always says no. So this is an argument in favor of labels. So think about if you've gone to a photographer's Instagram feed, for instance, where you can see a lot of photos all at once and they're all over the place. And your mind is like, I have no idea what they're doing. They might be good photos. They might be average, you know, they might be fabulous, but they're all over the place. Are you going to follow them? Because you don't know what to expect. You know, you're like, I don't know, because I don't know what I'm going to get. I'm kind of confused. Pass. And so, especially in the beginning, those labels or those identities help people from being confused, you know, keep them from being confused, mm-hmm. which can help you to build your own community, you know, build your tribe.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've spoken a lot about heuristics, which I'm a big fan of, mm-hmm. the study of heuristics. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of how they got created. Basically, like, as we evolved as Homo sapiens, we used to live in this world of all of these threats, like, you know, poisonous berries and saber-toothed tigers and all of these things that threatened our day-to-day life. And so we had to create these quick mental shortcuts that kept us safe, mm-hmm. or reduced our anxieties about certain situations. And that's what heuristics do and have served us. But they've also hijacked our brain for the modern world because they're not necessarily as useful as they used to be.
Right.
I think labels have kind of been born out of that reality of heuristics and the need for mm-hmm. heuristics and mental shortcuts and personal value systems, which help to guide our behavior and how we see ourselves. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. When you were saying that, you know, the first thing that popped into my head is, what happens when you see a car that has the Apple company sticker on it? What are the assumptions you make about that person? And I'm asking you.
Yeah, I mean, they like Apple. Maybe they have a little bit of money. Maybe, I don't know. they like the Apple ecosystem. Maybe they're, this is kind of a funny one, but I don't know, maybe they're politically liberal a little bit. But I don't know, like, I try really, really hard not to label people based on stuff like that, because we're wrong so often.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. But I would guess with the Apple, there's probably a lot of truth to what you just said. And I think of that little manifesto that Steve Jobs did that was about, like, we're for the rebels, you know, the people that go against the grain. We are creative. You know, think of the Apple 1984 commercial, taking a sledgehammer to Big Brother.
Right.
So, you know, that logo has come to stand for, it's a label that has come to stand for an entire value system. Mm-hmm. And you're right, we can't make assumptions that the person that chose that label necessarily shares all of those values. But there's probably, you know, something there. I think that that's part of the value, you know, again, that goes to that shortcut and making it easier to scan the environment and say, this person is part of my tribe. So even as a photographer, as I'm looking at other people's work, it sounds weird, but it's like, I almost feel like, oh, we would be friends if we knew each other, because there's so much that's similar about how we see the world. And so we make those, you know, those aren't labels, but it's like a visual shortcut. There's something there that it seems to represent. And so I'm not sure where I'm going with this, except to say that, you know, there's that persona that we adapt, you know, and a persona is a mask. And whatever labels we choose, whatever identity we choose, is going to communicate those values. And so it's kind of an interesting exercise, though, actually, you know, when I'm thinking about it, like, if you step back and say, if you look at your body of work and say, what am I communicating through these images? And, like, for you, with your emphasis and your value of authenticity in the landscape, then that's telling me something about what's important to you. So your values are being transmitted just through those images, even if I don't know that you founded the Natural Landscape Photography Awards. You know, I still know that there's something of value there. So that's one place where it's like, not the word labels necessarily, but what are you representing through your images? And are your images reflecting what's most important to you?
Mm. That's an interesting take on that, because that's often the type of thinking that goes through my head when I'm reading captions of photographs from people, where it's clearly not a natural photograph and they're attaching their real experience to the image that they're presenting. And for me, that it's like a very conflicting message where it's like, I value this thing, but then I don't. And so, whereas if they would caption it something like, I love the way that nature inspires me in my imagination to go in all these different directions, and I like to emphasize the way I'm feeling in the moment and change the photograph to represent X, Y, and Z, like, that would resonate with much more heavily for me as the viewer, and I would be much less like looking at it sideways, like, what? So I think, to your point, those values do get communicated in not only the imagery that we present to the world, but also how we talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true.
Yeah. Ultimately, what we're talking about here are the various ways that labels, preconceived ideas, and how we see ourselves as creatives can be hindrances to the creative process. What then do you feel are things that can improve or increase creativity that are outside of labels?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things come to mind. And one is the word releasing. So if we're talking about like things that aid our creativity, that open us up to releasing, you know, letting go of labels or letting go of attachments, that's a big part of it, is like releasing the attachment to labels, releasing attachment to outcomes, releasing our assumptions about who we are as artists or photographers, releasing our assumptions about what we're capable of, releasing our assumptions about what we're going to find interesting, and even being open to hearing, you know, from other people who find something really fascinating that we're like, I can't see myself, you know, doing that. But I think of Sarah Marino, hearing her at a conference several years ago. She said, her parents said, well, we're taking a trip to Death Valley. Do you want to come? And she was like, why on earth would I want to go there? Someplace called Death Valley. And then she went. And since then, she and her partner have hiked like every single, you know, hiking trail in the park. And she's got this gorgeous body of work from Death Valley. And so she, you know, even though her first reaction was like, what are you talking about? You know, why would I want to do that? She released that initial reaction and went anyway. And so being open to new experiences, being open to that unexpected is where we're going to find it. I also think of Richard Martin. I've watched him do a few, webinars now, and I can't wait to find a junkyard.
I know.
I desperately want to find a cool junkyard with like old cars and buses and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's only possible if we're releasing our assumptions about what we're going to find interesting, where there's going to be interesting things to photograph, what kind of photography we are. You know, like if you only do natural landscapes, why would I want to stand in front of a bus and look at rust? Well, you're going to find landscapes in that rust, I'll tell you. You know, it's going to be really interesting. And then that expands your horizons in general. And then I also was thinking about improv. you know, we've already alluded to one of those principles, which is that yes and. So, and. So saying yes to things, even, you know, in our case with the creativity, like saying yes and, how can I build on whatever it is that this opportunity is? Or saying yes when we are wanting to say no. And the other, you know, there's a few other improv principles that I think can help us creatively. You know, one is be average. In other words, like release the need to be the best or fantastic or to have 1,000 likes on your post or whatever it is. Be okay just like saying, like, you know, I don't need to be a superstar. I think people who say, I want to be a superstar, yeah, some of them become superstars, but there's, you know, it's kind of like if you're smart, you don't say, well, I'm really smart. you just do the work. You just do what you do, and you put your whole heart in it, and you do it authentically. And those other things are going to follow. So just like be average, just be yourself, be solid, be consistent, be persistent. And the other, you know, opportunities and those, that expansion will happen, right? Embracing your mistakes. You know, we talked a little bit about that earlier, embracing failure. If you're on an improv stage and you stick your foot in your mouth, you start working with the foot in the mouth, you know, and hopefully your partner right. does too. You just go with it. One person I used to partner with on some improv workshops, he said that what he was taught was, like, think about the clown in a circus. He said, if the clown falls or trips or does something goofy, it'll, like, swing out its arms and take a huge bow and draw attention to it and say, thank you very much. So, like, instead of hiding, you just say, there it was. Woohoo. I made a mistake. Now let's keep going. You know, let's move on. So I think those kinds of concepts, you know, we can learn a lot from theater and improv about how to be creative and in the moment and open to whatever is happening.
I love that. Yeah, release, the word release resonates with me a lot. Now, I was thinking about several conversations I've had for the last couple of days with various people, and one of them was with a really young photographer who's like super into wide angle, like sun stars and epic conditions. And I'm like, yeah, that's how I was too when I first started. And like he made a comment like, well, I sometimes I go to Rocky Mountain National Park and I come home with nothing because conditions weren't good. And, you know, and it's like you need to release yourself from what you expect you are going to find, or even
yes.
shift your mindset of what is actually good, right? Like maybe, mm-hmm. yeah, maybe there's no clouds and maybe there's no epic conditions, but I guarantee there's going to be plenty of things that will inspire you to make a photograph if you just release yourself from what is good. I mean, and, you know, release yourself from being attached to even coming home with anything at all. Like maybe you won't come home with a good yeah. photograph, and that's okay too. That's part of the learning process. And I was thinking about a conversation I had with my friend Kane, who I'm going out with tomorrow to Death Valley. Last time we went to Death Valley, we hiked all the way out to these dunes, and he was really upset because there wasn't any wind that like was cleaning off the footprints off the dunes. And he was just upset because all the sand dunes had footprints in them. And I was like, yeah, but there's still other stuff you can photograph other than like big dunes that, you know, or, you know, just don't worry about the dunes. Like, be, you know, mm-hmm. be flexible, be open to finding something different out there. It's not about that perfect image in your brain that, you know, don't worry about it. Just roll with it. Like improv. I think improv is a great analogy for an approach to photography.
Yeah. Because that's what we have to do more often than we get. It's seldom that we're handed the conditions that we were hoping for. You know, I on a simple level, you know, there's a garden conservatory about 45 minutes from me. And I went yesterday because it was supposed to be cloudy. And if it's too sunny, the sun comes right through and it's casting these, you know, it's just garish on the plants and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, good, it's going to be cloudy. Well, of course, the sun started coming out. And so I adjusted. You know, I had to. And so it, if we can practice that in small ways, we can do it in big ways, like when there's more at stake and you're at Death Valley or you've traveled 1,000 miles to be somewhere. And yeah, it's a mindset.
Yeah. And speaking of TJ Thorne, he actually responded to that thread in the Discord channel. He was like, yeah, maybe the conditions aren't good or whatever, and you can't find anything, but it's still an opportunity to practice. Like, practice seeing the yeah. world more creatively, practice new ideas, mm-hmm. practice different techniques, practice playing with your camera, getting more comfortable with your camera, practice with composition, even if the light's bad. Like, you know, mm-hmm. that's an opportunity that you're missing if you don't just embrace the conditions that you have been presented with.
Yep. Love what is.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So in our correspondence, you also shared a Walt Whitman quote with me relating to contradiction. And the quote is, do I contradict myself? Very well. Then I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. What is the essence of that quote, and how have you come to embrace it?
Yeah, you know, to me, it means that if I choose to embrace a certain label, I'm also free to contradict myself with that label. Because nobody can be reduced or distilled down to one simple identity. You know, from psychology, we contain multitudes. I mean, you know, it's like, it's a very poetic statement, but it's also incredibly true from a psychological perspective. Most of us have, to varying degrees, the clown, the serious person, the problem solver, the people pleaser, all these different things. We have this cast of characters inside of us, and society labels, you know, often wants to reduce us to just like one or two. I think that what Walt Whitman here in this quote is inviting us to do is like say, I'm large. I'm not going to be, you know, confined to staying in my lane all the time. And I would add, just to make you feel comfortable, I struggle with this. And this is one reason why I embrace this quote, is because it's a reminder to me that it's okay to contradict myself. Because in our social media age, if I'm posting like, oh, these are, you know, lovely, soft, calm, cool images, and then I go out and I take something that's like bright colors and sharp lines and I love it, I think, oh, do I post this? You know, I'm contradicting myself because people are getting into this routine of expecting this certain thing. Because over time, people, you know, we do that. And I struggle to post it. Like, even in the past few days, I've posted one or two things where I'm like, oh, I don't know. But that's about me giving other people too much power. You know, it's giving external validation too much power. And it's not embracing this idea of, I'm a both and. I'm a yes and. Yes, I do this and I do that and I do this and I do that and I do that. And that bold image is just as much me as the soft, flowing image. And my feeling is like the more that I can live into that, those seeming contradictions, the more creative I'm going to be in general, the more expansive and the less. And I mean, honestly, we haven't really talked about it, but burnout, you know, like from doing the same thing over and over and over again, or just trying to meet other people's expectations. I would get bored if I just kept doing the same thing over and over again. Some people wouldn't. Totally fine. You know, because it's like that's their happy place. They know it, and that's where they are. And I think that's awesome.
Right.
And, you know, for me, it's like, I can't do that. I need to be able to be bright red and pale blue. You know, it just, yeah.
Yeah, I think the other thing that is worth noting here in terms of the danger of too fully embracing labels or being too attached to labels is that you can, I mean, you mentioned it before, but you can get super, super pigeonholed. The other day, I shared some photographs that I really liked with a friend of mine, and he was like, those are not real. He's like, you know better. Those have been manipulated and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I still like them. You know, like, I already knew that. I knew how they were edited. That wasn't why I was sharing them. I was sharing them because I liked the message behind the image that I was sharing, not necessarily the way that it was created. But because I have embraced this identity of being the realism and landscape photography guy, people just expect that, like, I'm going to have these black and white views on things. And it actually led to me having like a 2-hour phone call with him and like, talking about the nuances of my belief systems and all of these things. Like,
yeah,
like I'm not like, you can't put me in that box, man. Like I have a lot of other ideas, you know? And so
nobody puts baby in a corner.
But it's, to be fair, I've put myself in that box. And so it's,
right.
You know, now it's my responsibility to like get out of the box a little bit and show people that, you know, I am pretty open-minded. I just have very strong opinions. And sometimes mm-hmm. I can come across as, you know, being black and white, which I don't want to be labeled as this black and white thinker. I'm actually very proud of the fact that I'm very gray in the way that I think about the world. And so, like, I embrace nuance. I love talking about nuance. And so, yeah. Anyway, I just thought that was a really good example of how labels can, like, work against us.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with, they can become something that we, that sabotage, you know, are self-sabotaging, and they can cause other people to kind of sabotage us if we put too much stock in their feedback. Like if you were to say, oh yeah, dude, you're so right. Yeah, that's not me at all. Okay. You know, but you've got the confidence and the experience and the wisdom and your own listening to your gut to know, no, yeah, this is actually me too. And here's the other thing that came up as you were sharing that is that there's that opportunity. Like, I think it's awesome that he pushed back that way and then you pushed back, because it's an opportunity to have this conversation that emphasizes the fact that we can stretch ourselves, and that that when we are doing it intentionally. You didn't just willy-nilly like, oh, I'm just going to play with this and whatever. Like, you had an intention, and it was coming from a place of experience. It's kind of the, you learn the rules so you know how to break the rules, and you established your own rules so you can break your own rules, and you're doing it very thoughtfully. And there's a difference between that and just the, you know, following trends. You weren't doing it to follow a trend. You were doing it because, like, this is what's going to fulfill my artistic vision.
Right.
And there's a difference.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard because I feel like in the world of 2024 and social media and the way that traditional media has gone, like, it's, everything is so black and white now. There's no nuance to anything. Yeah. And it's like the nuance, like within the nuance is where the beauty happens. Like that's where people get to share their perspectives, and you make compromises, and you learn from other people's ideas, and have a greater and deeper understanding of different perspectives, and incorporate some of those perspectives into your own way of thinking. And so, like, I'm constantly challenging myself to do that, like things that are contradictive to the way that I normally think, mostly just to keep myself in check. Like, am I still thinking about this the way I think I should? And, oh, actually, there's a little piece here that I should probably put into the way I see the world. So I highly encourage other people to do that in their own way of thinking, whether it be, you know, we're talking about photography, but it could really be about politics, how you view people of other nationalities or genders or, you know, race, ethnicity.
Parenting.
Parenting, exactly. You know? I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's like,
yeah,
like we're so stuck in our ways and the way we think about the world, and it's not healthy.
No, it is not healthy, and we're paying the price for that lack of nuance. And that's why I think it's cool that you had that conversation and that we're having this conversation, because I think the more people that can hear what nuance sounds like, practice nuance, ask themselves questions, you know. I know all the people that I hang out with tend to be in that space, and I'm guessing most of the people you hang out with are all in that space too, but it's not common, and it's good to just keep push. I think it's a drum worth beating, I guess, you know, the gray areas.
Yeah, embrace it.
Yep.
All right. So, Beth, I wanted to talk about your YouTube/podcast platform that you have created called Pixels. Mm-hmm. You ask your guests to share advice relating to creativity cross-training. What creativity cross-training advice do you have for our listeners?
Yeah. Ooh, okay.
Flip the script.
I know, right? I love it. Well, you know, I'm in the process of trying to put some of this into action. So the creativity cross-training is like, what else can you do that is either in a creative vein, but that is outside of your genre, and so in this case, photography, or what is something that you do that is like completely unrelated that somehow can support your development? And so in terms of like finding something that has nothing to do with photography and seeing what I can learn about it, I want to try agility training with my dog.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. She'll be 2 years old in May. She's a lab. She's active. She's athletic. She loves to run. She loves to jump. And I'm not particularly athletic. I'm not a runner. I, you know, like to hike. I like to move as far as like doing my photography and stuff, but I'm not like an athlete. So it would be a stretch for me to do it because it's really like, it's a partnership, right? With the owner and the dog. And, I don't know what I'm going to learn from it yet. But something in my gut says I'm going to learn something through the process of working with her in learning something completely new to me, in moving my body, something is going to come up for me, and I don't know what it is yet.
I fully expect a blog post entitled "What I Learned About My Creative Approach to Photography Through Agility Training My Dog."
Yes, I think it's going to happen. Absolutely, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure you can rank number one for those search terms because it's very niche.
Because no one else is going to. Exactly. So yeah, I'm very excited to see. And I mean, you know, I had that experience when I went out to Death Valley for the first time last, you know, January of 23. I was so excited, number one, because Sarah Marino had done such a good sales job of Death Valley, that I was like, oh, I got to go there. This just looks cool. And so I, you know, went on a workshop with TJ Thorne and Alex Noriega. And I remember, you know, putting in my deposit and getting all excited. And then I was reading the materials and I was like, oh my God, this is a landscape photography workshop. I haven't done landscape photography. I'm not a landscape photographer. Again. I know I'm not a landscape photographer. What am I doing? You know, I mean, I didn't second guess myself, but it sounds weird that I would like sign up for a workshop and not really let that sink in. But because I had put myself in a particular bucket and I wasn't thinking of it, and I was like, oh, Death Valley, that's going to be cool. And I like those teachers. And so let's go. And I was like, oh man, do I know what I'm doing? Am I going to be ready for this? Do I know enough going into it? You know, because I've always been this, I need to be able to teach the class before I take the class, you know, preparer. And so that was one of those, in a way, it was like a very, internal creativity cross-training because I hadn't done landscape photography before. I had mostly done like macro-ish, you know, flowers and that sort of thing. It was completely different. But it has really opened up the way I see everything.
Well, and you couldn't have picked two better instructors in terms of, you know, eliminating labels and helping people think about the creative process. The landscape just happens to be the canvas on which you're using as a paint, but like the rest is totally open.
Yeah, I love that analogy. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So speaking of Pixels, your platform, what do you hope to accomplish with it? And maybe tell us a little bit about kind of what it's going to look like or what it does look like.
Yeah. Well, depending on when this people are listening to this, it either will be about to be launched or in its early stages of being launched, I hope. But I really hope that it's a supportive and I'm going to put it this way. This is the contradiction, supportive and challenging space for photographers and artists to connect with their authentic and their heart-centered creativity. So I say supportive in that I want whoever I'm talking to, it's interview-based. You and I have had a conversation. I've talked to Alex. I've talked to TJ. I'm talking to numerous other photographers who I feel like share a philosophy of generosity when it comes to our learning, our sharing, our growth, our evolution. There's not a scarcity mindset of, oh, I can't tell you what my secret sauce is because you might go out and take it. You know, there's the supportive part is that I want to talk to photographers and maybe even expanding that a little bit into people who are artists and maybe in that creativity cross training and in other genres, you know, that are generous with sharing their wisdom, their expertise, their lessons learned. One of the things that I ask my guests is about their pivot pixels. So where are points in your journey? What are images that serve as these pivot points where you were conscious of some sort of leap forward or shift in your perspective, in your skill, in your confidence? Because I think we can learn a lot from that, especially with social media. If you're just dropping in and following somebody who's been at it for, you know, a decade or more, you can think, oh, they've always taken fantastic photos. But we know that there's a whole story behind that. So I want to get a little bit at that. And I want to talk about the art and the heart. So that's the tagline, exploring the art and the heart of photography. The challenging thing is that I do hope that through that sharing that people will feel like they are being challenged to stretch themselves, challenged to take some risks, challenged to grow, challenged to try new things, that it's not just do what makes you feel comfortable, but do what's going to stretch you and expand, you know, who you are. And ultimately, I hope it's just a space where it just causes, you know, it provides space for reflection, for more intentionality, for more of a sense of community, encouragement, that sort of thing. So the core product, if you will be interview-based conversations on YouTube. I plan to do a few talking head kinds of posts as well, and I'm hoping as part of it there will be some creative challenges that get baked in, whether they're in those interviews or in the solo posts, where it's prompts and things to kind of push you to try some new things.
Yeah, there's some good stuff that happens in that out of your comfort zone. I mean, whether or not, yeah. I mean, I've had some pretty weird situations in my life, you know, like getting fired from a job or getting laid off from a job. Like, talk about being out of your comfort zone, right? Like,
oh yeah,
you're in the thick of it. But some good stuff can come out of those situations. I mean, and not only that, but like in photography as well. Like, you know, I think that's what we've been talking about this entire episode is, get rid of your labels, or at least like lose a little bit of the attachment you have to your labels so that you can free yourself up to be a little bit more creative and pursue things that you might not otherwise have if you were too attached to that idea. I will say this, having been on the other side of the microphone with you, I'm very excited for your podcast and your platform, because I feel like you have a gift in extracting the right types of material from people's brains in order to make it an interesting conversation. So I'm excited to see where it goes. And
thank you.
I'm a strong believer in, like, we need more podcasts and YouTube channels that talk about these things. Like, so I'm excited for you. So I hope to see it do really well.
Oh, thank you so much, Matt. And thank you for being part of that initial group of folks that I'm interviewing. And I want to extend the same to you. You asked me some really amazing questions that have really helped me to think and put some thoughts together. So I'm very appreciative.
Absolutely. Last question. Who do you recommend for the podcast? Who are a couple of people that our listeners should learn more about that we should try to have a conversation here on the show?
Yeah, well, two came to mind. One is Stephanie Johnson. She is a photographer. She's based in Iowa. I have taken one of her workshops, a virtual workshop, but her specialty is ICM, so intentional camera movement. And since I've been following her, it's been a few years now. I have seen this, I mean, you know, for us talking about, you know, I've seen this evolution where she's continued to stretch her own creative vision. And for the longest time, her ICMs were single exposure and of nature and whatnot, you know, the sunsets and things like that. And they were gorgeous. And what I've seen is this expansion into larger landscapes, architecture, you know, scenes from life, and multiple exposures with her ICM, and all in camera, and very creative, and she's very passionate about it. So I really recommend checking out Stephanie. And yeah. She also is one of the founders of the ICM Photography Magazine and a very active Facebook group.
That's what I was going to say, because I had one of the co-founders, Kaisa Seren, on the show last summer, and we talked a little bit about the magazine on there. So if people are more curious about that, they can check out that episode. And I've been talking to Stephanie forever now, and I feel like I finally need to just like convince her to come on the show and talk. So I think it's a good recommendation.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. And the other person is someone who is at the Death Valley workshop with me, Eric Lee. I know you can find him on Instagram. I hope you get a chance to talk to him. Where he is from, I have no idea. And that's because he travels so much. He is always on to the next location, whether it's Iceland or New Zealand or, you know, the Galapagos, you know, you name it. He's Alaska, you know, he's been all these places, and his photography is the word epic gets thrown around a lot, so I don't necessarily want to use that word epic, but it's got I just think it has a lot of soul, and he's a very fun person. he's a very funny person. I think he's insightful, and I think you would have a lot of fun talking to him and talking about landscape photography.
Brilliant. Well, if you're up for it, when we're done here, I would love to record a little bonus episode for our Patreon supporters.
Sure.
But just wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure, a real treat. And like I said before, I am really, really excited for your podcast because it is... this is going to sound bad, but it feels lonely sometimes. Like, I want more content that I can listen to. Like, I don't want to listen to myself talk. I want to listen to other people do their podcasts as well. So, like, thank you for joining in on that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for the warm welcome.
You bet. All right.
Well, thank you to Beth for the amazing chat. I can't wait to see where your new podcast goes. I have a feeling that it's going to be pretty incredible. If you enjoyed our chat, please be sure to tune in to our bonus episode on Patreon, where we explore the intersections between coaching, nonprofit management, and photography. Joining Patreon is free, and we have some really wonderful conversations over there. I would love to see more active listeners engaging on each episode, so please check it out. Did I mention it's free? Of course, I also value your financial support on Patreon, and I'm a strong advocate in financially supporting the things that we find value in, such as this podcast, I hope. If you found value in today's free episode, please help out by supporting the show. It just takes a minute of your time, and it helps to keep food on my family's table. Cheers. Just go to patreon.com /headstopandlisten, or find a link in the show notes. That's all for now. Thanks for stopping in, collaborating with us, and listening. See you next week.